Good morning. Welcome to First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. I'm Chris Jimerson, your lay leader this morning. We are an intentionally inclusive congregation, and we welcome everyone to our church. Please join me in affirming our mission printed in your order of service and on the wall. We gather in community to nourish souls, transform lives, and do justice.
I know that your order of service says that Ed is going to be delivering the sermon this morning, but instead, it's going to be a group of us talking about Ed. My name is Nell Newton, and I am not in charge of anything anymore. As Sir Mick and Sir Keith have already told us, you can't always get what you want, but you'll get what you need. And that is exactly what we got when we called Ed Brock and asked him if he would consider serving as our interim minister for this past year. We didn't know this at the time, so let me back up. The process by which churches obtain interim ministers is much more streamlined than the search for settled ministers. While a settled search takes about 9 people, 18 months, an interim search can be done by as few as 5 people in 3 months with a little matchmaking help from the UUA. So last spring, we were wrapping up a fairly successful year of soothing interim ministry provided by Reverend Janet Newman, and we knew we still had some more work to do before we'd really be ready to call a settled minister, and we'd heard stories about other interim ministers who specialized in shaking up the status quo, and they're kind of like the SWAT ministers who, you know, come in swinging their brooms, and they have a critical eye for bad habits, and they cut no slack for sentimental tradition if it stands in the way of progress. Well, perhaps that's what we should look for. I mean, no nonsense interim would make us stand up straight and straighten our ties and do things their way. It would be good for us. We knew we had some bad habits, and we were ready to be humbled if necessary. As the president of the congregation at that time, I was kept apprised of the progress, and I would be the one to make any formal offers. The search team was sent 4 names from the UUA, possible interims. Ooh, and 2 of them had the reputation of being real stem-to-stern change specialists. Perfect. But nothing went as planned. For assorted reasons, none of those 4 names answered when we called to inquire. And, oh dear, perhaps we weren't challenging enough for them. Or, worse, maybe we were too far gone. I called the office at the UUA, and I tried to not let them hear the worry rising in my voice. We need more names. Of course, we'll send more names, not to worry. This happens all the time. Trust the process. You'll get the right minister. 4 more names arrived. And immediately, the search team pushed one name ahead of the others, Reverend Ed Brock, a minister trained in family systems therapy. Ooh, we've heard about family systems therapy. And he's a trained counselor. Ooh, we could use some counseling. I was a little nervous when I called you. Could you consider us? Yes. Wonderful. Thank you. Yes. Thank you. When Ed first arrived, he didn't kick in the doors. He didn't tell us we were doing things all wrong. And he was nice. He was the kind of guy who'd pull you over to the side and tell you if you had spinach stuck in your front teeth. And during the first visit with the board, he gave us the nicest little gift. He told us that during this year, we would be busy at work searching for our next settled minister, but that one thing we should remember always is that we already have our settled ministry here in the form of our lay leadership and our congregation. We are the enduring ministry of this church. Oh, my heart just melted then and there. Instead of telling us we were a lost cause, he had held up a mirror and shown us how strong and lively and beautiful we are. Instead of marching ahead of us, he walked alongside us during a whole year of heavy work. He pointed out some dusty places, and he held a flashlight steady as we went into some of the darker places. He kept us company and encouraged us all along to keep going as we cleaned the windows and overhauled the bylaws and learned to trust ourselves to do good work. Ed's ministry showed us that, no, you don't always get what you think you want. But if you do the work, trust the process, and say, yes, 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 you will get what you need.
In the past year, I've had the opportunity to work with Reverend Brock Ed in a variety of ways and on a weekly basis almost. After spending all of this time with him, I can tell you one thing for certain. The Reverend Edward L. Brock is not normative. And that's a good thing. When it comes to large systems, oftentimes normative is great because what has become normal practice is the result of much experience, experimentation, and research to determine what works best. In an interim minister, though, normative could mean average when what we are hoping for is excellence. Excellence is what we got in the extraordinary Ed Brock. So, let me count the ways that Ed has been not normative. One, despite his self-effacing and modest disposition, Ed has dared to tell us how his experience and training might inform the opportunities and challenges we have encountered to help us begin to implement the covenant, governance, and mission groundwork that we laid in our first year of interim ministry, even when it meant challenging prior ways of doing things and ingrained ways of thinking, and all without disagreement or controversy. Two, he has sent us some of the wisest and most detailed email messages I have ever seen. Many of them sounded just like one of his sermons. Some of them were shorter. Three, his sermons have contained a terrific mix of humor, inspiration, and topical wisdom that we needed to hear. Some of them were even better than his email messages. Four, Ed has gave some great stewardship speeches that helped increase pledges at a time when the church really needed it. As they said in the small Texas town where I grew up, he can talk a dog off a piece of meat. Five, Ed did all of this while mentoring not one, but two Unitarian Universalist ministerial aspirants. I'm so grateful for the advice and opportunities he has given me, not to mention for all the various recommendation forms and paperwork he has had to complete for me as I applied to seminary, scholarship funds, the Unitarian Universalist Association, etc. In fact, it got to be so much extra work for Ed at one point that I took to taking previous forms he had filled out, reformatting them to fit whatever I was applying to this time, and giving them to Ed to sign if he was okay with what I had done. Oh, that reminds me. Ed, oh, and on the second page also. Sorry. I'm suddenly realizing I can't possibly cover all of the extraordinary gifts Ed has brought to us in the last year. So let me just close by saying this. If helping a congregation to call an exceptional, settled minister by guiding us through the work necessary to chart a future filled with magnificent promise with that settled minister is what we hope is normative for a second-year interim ministry in a UU church, then Ed has set the new gold standard with us. Thank you, Ed, for a wonderful year.
I spent the better part of the last year trying to follow Ed's wisdom in all things. So this morning I'm eschewing that wisdom and the wisdom of my wife, who said, don't speak extemporaneously. It's a bad, bad, bad idea. Now, if today's service goes well, I want you to all thank Ed Brock, because he gave those of us who are speaking today the material to work with. If it goes badly, you can leave a note in my board trustee mailbox because it was all my fault because it was mostly my idea. However, at first I really wanted to come up and do a service for Ed, and Ed was like, you know, I don't know if you guys know this, I like to talk. So just for those of you who don't know me well, Ed said, you know, maybe you up there for 20 minutes is not the best idea. Maybe what we need is maybe we'll get some other people up there. And I think this is just another one of Ed's subtle ways of teaching me a lesson I didn't know that I needed to learn. Because what he did was he put me up here in sequence after our two ministerial aspirants to make sure that if I had any predilections about how skilled I was in the podium, they would be quickly put to rest by having to follow Nell and Chris. But, you know, Ed was right, I think, as in most things. The other thing is that Ed said he wanted a roast instead of a bunch of adulation. So I'll try and keep the poignancy to a minimum and honor his desire for humor instead. Although I'll try to make those of the jokes at my expense instead of his, just because that is really what I learned from Ed in the last year. I had the honor last year, the year before Ed came, to hear Dr. Laura Huffman, head of the Texas Nature Conservancy, speak on leadership. And what she said was that true leadership derives as the ability to frame difficult conversations. The ability to take something that's sensitive, that's a sore spot, something that we might call here in a church setting a sacred cow, and to put it on a table. In a way that we get to really talk about it, in a way that we get to put it on the table instead of leaving it untouched. And I think that Ed has helped us do that. He has helped us put some things that were sacred cows on the table. He's done it in a way that's been respectful, clear-eyed, with the goals of the church and the health of the congregation in mind. But most importantly, he's done it with a tremendous sense of compassion. I can't tell you how much personally it has meant to me to watch his leadership in action and to see what it means to have someone who leads with compassion first. To have someone model the behavior that at least I personally aspire to always stay in that calm place where I am giving people with whom I vociferously disagree the benefit of the doubt. Where I am really trying to hear them and listen to them and treat them with the dignity and respect that each and every one of us deserve. And to watch Ed over the past year model that behavior at meeting after meeting, in tight spot after tight spot, has been so valuable to me. So thank you, Ed. And now I'm going to hand this off to two speakers who will surely also do better than I have done, but it has been my pleasure to come up here and tell you how much, and I'm not ashamed to admit this, how much I love Ed Brock.
Good morning. Chris Jimerson asked me to say a few words about the past year and the work that we've accomplished with the help of Ed Brock. I was tempted to say a few nice things about Ed, but I think all the good things that can be said about Ed were said by Ed in the last two sermons. No, in all seriousness, early on during my first year on the Board of Trustees, a dozen or so of us sat around the tables in one of the classrooms on a hot Saturday morning, and Nell asked us an interesting question. She asked us to check in by taking turns and saying, what had we given up to be here on a Saturday to do governance? I thought it was a great idea to recognize what we were sacrificing that day to do the work of the church. And I thought it would help us to get to know each other better. And there were a variety of answers. There's lots of fun things going on Saturdays in Austin that people were passing up. If I remember correctly, what I felt most keenly was that I was missing some time with my family. My daughter had a soccer game that morning, and maybe they were going swimming in the afternoon. Whenever anyone in our community devotes some of their time, talent, or treasure in serving the mission of our church, they're giving up something too. Just to be here this morning, each one of you has given up something. Maybe it's time that you could have spent on your house or your garden, or maybe time reading this morning, or maybe it's just sleep. As the parent of a toddler, I know how precious that is. So we're all giving up a little something to be here. Now, Ed has been joking the past 2 weeks, asking us if we would record a brief message that he could share with his family so that they could understand what he was up to here in Austin and how important that was. And I think if you reflect on that for a moment, that request, the human side of Ed comes out. And on Father's Day, I think it's appropriate that we acknowledge that. That behind the professional role of minister that Ed has lived so well, there's also the role of husband and father. And as many of you know, Ed has a wife and children in Washington State that he's been apart for good chunks this year. And so that's why he asked us to record the videos. And this shows that Ed, too, has had to give up something to be here this year. And it shows that he must have a lot of faith in our religion and in our church to do that. Now, I can't speak for the good Reverend Ed, but I've come to know him a little bit, and I think I understand why he's doing what he does. It's similar, perhaps, to why my wife is a teacher. He does it for the money. Now, you can't do interim ministry without a deep belief that what we do here at church is important. I can't recall where I first heard these words, but they stuck with me, and that is, we have a life-saving message here. Okay, let that sink in. We have a life-saving message. Whether the we is Unitarian Universalism or if we're talking about this church here in Austin. And I know Ed really believes that we have a life-saving message and that we can make a real difference in the world and in our community. I want to thank Ed for all his wonderful contributions to this church this year. I really want to thank the congregation for your hard work and the trust that you placed in the board this year. When I'm at church, I'm always delighted to see that there's a community of people who are willing to make sacrifices, small and large, towards a higher purpose. I hope that you are and continue to be nourished, and that you find your life being transformed, as I have, as I've worked this year with Reverend Ed and other leadership at the church. I look forward to my final year on the board as your board secretary, and I cannot wait to see what happens when Meg gets here.
I have been reflecting a lot lately on the state of our church 2 years ago and now. I was not excited about the prospect of an interim minister, even though I had been in congregations, including this church, with interim ministers of whom I was very fond. And perhaps that was why I was not looking forward to more, as I had quickly bonded with these interim ministers, only to have them move away from my congregation in a short time. So I was eager to just get on with it and hurriedly organize a search for our next settled minister. If I had been the grand poobah or the decider, to quote a former president from Texas, this is what we would have done. I came to believe, though, in the wisdom of not only having one interim minister for 1 year, but a second interim for the following year. Our church has been so blessed with both our interim ministers, Janet Newman and Ed Brock, who have each brought different gifts at just the right time. I have been struck in looking back at the past 2 years about how much our church has grown by doing things the right way. to have a deliberate transition from one settled minister to the next, with time for re-examination about who we are as a congregation, resulting in a beautiful new mission, our values, and our ends. That was the right way to do things. For time to identify what needed to change to make us a better, healthier congregation as we prepare for our next settled minister. That was the right way to do things. Joe Sullivan, a consultant with Unity Consulting, observed at our board retreat last weekend that we not only commissioned the Bridge Builders report from Peter Steinke, but contrary apparently to many churches, we actually read it, and we actually implemented the actions called for in the report. So we have done many things the right way these past 2 years. But what I would like to speak about today in closing our homilies is not only the part that Reverend Brock has played in helping us do things the right way, but the courage he has demonstrated in pointing us toward doing the right thing. And there is a difference. Doing the right thing is much riskier. It involves poking more sacred cows. It is often more challenging to determine the right thing to do than to look through a rule book or a policy manual for answers on the right way to do things. It takes more courage. Ed has worked tirelessly to help us determine the right thing to do. He has done so with our mission and our values and our ends as his compass. And as we wish Ed Godspeed with grateful hearts for the time he has spent with us, and prepare to welcome Meg, we know that we now have the foundation upon which we as a congregation can work tirelessly to do the right thing at First UU, to allow our mission and our values and our ends to guide us to become the thriving congregation we all want to become.
It's hard to follow all those wonderful speeches, but I will try with just some very brief remarks. I love you all. I will miss you all. I think you have a wonderful congregation here. I think that you have a fabulous future for all the reasons pointed out by the speakers. Let me just close my remarks by a few thoughts about response to crisis and how it proves and tests and builds character, and how the way this church has done that shows that you are an incredibly strong congregation and that you have a wonderful future. Let me try to pull three examples from somewhat recent history. Many of you remember Katrina when the storm hit in New Orleans a number of years ago. And if you'll remember, the response to that was a combination of confusion and befuddlement and uncertainty, and in some cases, Americans turning against Americans, and a lot of name-calling and finger-pointing evokes the true character of people and groups and collectives. Recently, in Vancouver, British Columbia, in Canada, a large group of people reacted to the crisis of a Canadian team failing to win against an American team. And if you knew Canadians and how they value hockey, you would understand that was a crisis. And so what a large number of people did is they threw a fit. You might remember about 4 or 5 months ago, there was another crisis on the stage of our contemporary history down in Chile. And a group of miners were trapped underground, and they were in a circumstance that in many places, probably the U.S. included, would be considered to be a hopeless situation. But that's not what happened in the face of this hopeless situation. The president of the country came down and set up shop right there, held court. He, working with many, many others, marshaled the resources of the country, and they saved the people from the almost certain grip of death. So those are three different ways that people can respond to crises, the crises and the difficulties. One was acting out, and one was finding the will and the resolve to marshal the resources to meet the challenge. And what I would like to share with you today is that this congregation has proven beyond the shadow of a doubt that it is extraordinarily strong. Because in the face of a crisis 2 or 2.5 years ago, and this is not about blaming or accusation or pointing fingers, but a crisis occurred, and in the face of that crisis, this congregation showed tremendous resilience and resolve. And I was able to witness that in the form of the board over the course of this last year, where a group of people, your board members, came together and, building on the past, did the unusual thing of following through on plans that had been developed, and with great dedication and great meticulousness came up with a vision for the future that puts you on the path that you are now. Now you're looking at a very powerful and wonderful future. I see nothing but blue sky for you and a wonderful time. And maybe at some point when you reach one of those peaks of glory that you surely will, sometime in the next few years, you can invite me back to look at the wonderful fruits you have wrought. Thank you for all you've done, and I will forever remember you as great people and great friends. My benediction is, may an awareness of the gifts of life and the preciousness of each moment be in us and among us. May the memories we have gathered here give us hope for our lives and for our future. May the love we feel here bring strength to our hearts as we let principles guide our deeds. And may that peace which passes all understanding be within us and among us until we meet again. Amen.
This is a presentation of the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. For more information, visit our website at www.austinuu.org.